Hey, it's Avery Trufelman, host of Articles of Interest. And I've got to say, I've been a fan of KQED ever since I was a little kid, and I would come out to San Francisco to visit my grandma. It was just what we'd always turn on every time we got in the car, every time we were making dinner and turning on the radio. It was always KQED. And then over the years, I've become a massive fan of KQED podcasts because this is local reporting at its best. These are answers to questions you've always wanted to know, interviews with exciting, unusual voices, necessary journalism, all told with love and care and artistry. And did you know that a majority of KQED's funding actually comes from members? It's just people like you and me supporting the programs they love, while also getting access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. If you want to sign up and be a part of this amazing community, visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to become a member today. That's podcasts with an S. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your support.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. The United States will continue to draw down its troops in Afghanistan and Iran, Pentagon officials announced yesterday, a move Senator Mitch McConnell called a mistake. We'll talk with Richard Haass of the Council on Foreign Relations about the plan. Then at 9:30, some Stanford University faculty want the university to sever its ties with the Hoover Institution. They say misrepresentations of science by Hoover Fellow and Trump coronavirus advisor Dr. Scott Atlas pose a threat to public health. We'll get the details on how longstanding tensions between the conservative-leaning think tank and Stanford are reaching a boiling point. That's all next, after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The Pentagon announced yesterday that it will continue to withdraw U.S. troops from Afghanistan and Iraq, leaving 2,500 in each nation by January 15th. The move drew bipartisan rebukes from lawmakers and some top military commanders who say the troop reduction is premature and could further destabilize Afghanistan in particular. The announcement comes as President Trump continues to install loyalists at the Pentagon and a week after he fired Defense Secretary Mark Esper. We're going to talk about what's behind the drawdown in Iraq and Afghanistan and other foreign and military policy decisions that the Trump administration is making in this lame duck period. And joining us is Richard Haass, president of the Council on Foreign Relations. His most recent book is The World, A Brief Introduction. And welcome back to Forum. Richard Haass, good to have you.
Always good to be with you, Michael.
And let's begin by talking about this pullback. And I should mention, we're not only talking about Afghanistan and Iraq, we're also talking about Somalia, but this is being done at a time, January 15th, which is just five days before the Biden administration will presumably be moving in, now in limbo. And what does that mean in terms of national security, that there's no transition yet?
Well, there's no upside. The fact that there's no transition can only hurt whenever Joe Biden does take over, and let's just say January 20th, he's going to inherit an extraordinarily difficult inbox. And the more time he and his team have to prepare for it, the better the country will be. So there's nothing to be gained by delaying the transition. The array of international challenges is extraordinary. In terms of what you began the show with, you set it up exactly right. This is being determined not by local conditions, unless by local you mean the Trump White House. This is a political calendar, rather than on-the-ground conditions in Afghanistan or Iraq or anywhere else. It's inappropriate, I would argue, to do this during any transition. But again, what's driving this, I believe, it's always dangerous to project, but I believe it's Mr. Trump's desire to make good on certain promises he made, and it's consistent with his worldview, which tends to be relatively unilateralist and isolationist. But it will not be good either for the situation in any of these countries or for America's long-term efforts, among other things, against terrorism or for our reputation for reliability.
Well, let's talk about some of those concerns, because they are profound and they are certainly deep in so many ways. And we should mention perhaps the fact that the president had promised to get troops out by Christmas. He's just cutting them in half. But the last time there was a major pullout from Iraq, it led to the rise of the Islamic State there and in Syria. And there's great concern, and understandably so, about the Taliban taking over, as they did in 1996, possibly in Afghanistan, or for that matter, Afghanistan being a sanctuary for terrorism, not only because of Al-Qaeda, but because of ISIS and, the Taliban itself.
Well, look, all those concerns are warranted. I wish I could argue differently, but I can't. What's particularly ironic in Iraq is not only is this, we have some history to go by, as you suggested, it weakens the ability to fight terrorism. But if the administration is concerned about Iranian influence, this seems to me paves the way for increased Iranian influence in Iraq. So even by their own lights, this makes no sense. And Afghanistan is really bad. They signed an agreement in February with the Taliban. They bypassed the government, which in and of itself was bad. It's not a peace agreement, though it claims to be. It really is an American withdrawal agreement. The Taliban did not have to give up their arms, did not have to agree to a ceasefire. And they made rhetorical pledges about their relationship with terrorists. But you can't take any of those to the bank. This is really, after all we've done in Afghanistan, and including mistakes, I'm prepared to argue that the United States overreached there in trying to remake aspects of the country. But this is the opposite mistake. This is underreaching. And I hate for the idea come that down the road, some future administration, be it Joe Biden's or someone after him, may have to contemplate doing things in places like Iraq or Somalia or Afghanistan simply because the Trump administration raced to the exits.
And we should mention, since you brought up Somalia, that the timing on this is really terrible because there's actually parliamentary elections that are coming up soon in about a month. And there's a concern that counterterrorism there, of Shabab-led counterterrorism, could be stalled working against Shabab. But this was why, getting back to Afghanistan for a moment, this is why Mark Esper, the Secretary of Defense, was fired. He was concerned about the effects of a rapid pullout on the troops and the remaining, what that would mean in terms of our alliances, but also there's ongoing peace negotiations between the Taliban and the Afghan government that are pretty crucial here too, aren't there?
Well, again, there's negotiations going on. I'm skeptical about them. But even if you were a believer in these negotiations, I can't think of a worse way to negotiate than to unilaterally make these kinds of reductions. I mean, Mr. Trump is renowned for, quote unquote, the art of the deal. Well, you'll get a deal here, but you won't get a deal that's worth the paper it's written on. It won't last. The Taliban will have no incentive to meet its commitments, and this risks demoralizing and undermining the government. What we ought to be doing over time is potentially reducing our presence, but we ought to do it in a coordinated way with the government, with our NATO allies who are also there on the ground, and it ought to be done in conjunction with significant long-term commitments of military aid, economic support, intelligence support. Essentially, it ought to be coordinated, and it ought to be carried out only in a context in which stability and our interests can be protected. This is a textbook case of how not to go about it.
And I'm struck also, Richard, by the fact that there have been attacks, despite this agreement that was signed in February, this diplomatic agreement, on personnel, the coalition personnel, even though it was signed. Mm-hmm. And there have also been, let's go to Iraq for a moment, rockets fired into the Green Zone in Baghdad near the U.S. Embassy shortly after that withdrawal was announced. So a lot of this is pretty ominous in many ways and certainly ought to be of great concern. But I want to also look at this with you for a moment from the political standpoint. You have a lot of President Trump's fellow Republicans who are balking at this, including Mitch McConnell.
Mm-hmm. That, to me, is the only bright side of this, is that it shows that there is a degree of bipartisan support for a serious foreign policy, which includes a continued American presence in the world, one dimension of which is military. So the fact that these Republicans on the Hill are willing to stand up to President Trump, at least in this domain, is welcome. And it also bodes well for the Biden foreign policy, for the Biden administration. I'm not naive. I know how difficult it will be in many areas to forge a common policy path. but on matters towards China, on matters towards Russia, on some aspects of American deployments abroad. This suggests to me that the Biden administration, and or even if the Republicans keep the Senate after the Georgia votes, this suggests to me that at least in some areas, bipartisanship in foreign policy is a real possibility.
Nice to hear that ray of hope, at least in the wake of all this. And by the way, if you would like to join us with Richard Haass, you're welcome to do that. You give us a call now, and I invite you to do that. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. Please feel free to join the program with any questions or comments you might have. We're talking about what's behind the troop drawdown in Iraq and Afghanistan and other foreign policy news with the President of the Council on Foreign Relations. We welcome your involvement. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions you may have to forum@kqed.org. I want to just get also your take, talk more about the withdrawals and the plans, and also talk about Iran, time permitting, and certainly get our listeners involved in this discussion as well. But what do you make about this Chris Krebs, head of cybersecurity, being let go, presumably because he said it was a fair election? I think that seems to be the primary reason. He's a man who many attest to as being of great integrity.
You call me madcap, call me a dinosaur, but in my experience, you used to get rid of people not for doing their job, but for not doing their job. And this is, in the old Superman comic books, this used to be called Bizarro World, where everything is reversed. Right. So here you have people being fired for doing their jobs, and you have people keeping jobs who are not doing them. It's quite extraordinary. This administration in some ways is going to go out the way it came in, by violating norms left and right. But it's dangerous for our democracy. And again, it undermines what we should be projecting to the world, that this is a country that respects and cherishes its democratic institutions. And one of the important ones is this norm about how you act when you lose an election. And this is every time I think, Michael, that I've exhausted the potential for surprise, things like this happen. And so here we are again. And I think there's a serious thing to take from this. It's, Mr. Trump had what, more than 70 million people's vote for him. I understand why many of those did, but it worries me in one way that he still has the support he has, given that people ought to be pushing back. This is not, he's not doing this in the interests of the country. He's doing this in his own personal interest. And I would like to think that those who voted for him would see the distinction.
Can you talk a little bit more about what's going on in Afghanistan presently? I mean, the Taliban are advancing and against Afghan forces.
Sure.
I mean, they're being besieged in the south and the north. They're advancing over about two-thirds of the country, aren't they?
Somewhere between 40, 50, 60% of the country is either controlled by the Taliban or is not secure against them. The Taliban will always control, always is a big word, but likely to control a big chunk of the south. That's where they have their ethnic base, their roots. Again, I see no evidence that they have fundamentally changed their stripes, and they're taking on the government wherever they can. You've also got other groups that are neither Taliban nor government. You've got various terrorist organizations who are still holed up in parts of Afghanistan. So, I can't sit here, no one can sit here and honestly say if the United States keeps 5,000 troops there, or 50,000 troops, or 150,000 troops, we will have peace and stability in Afghanistan. We tried that. It didn't work. But what I want to avoid is a situation where the government is overrun, where the Taliban set up shop over most or all of the country, and then they're in a position to, one way or another, allow terrorist groups to come back in. So I think we were naive to aim for peace with the Taliban. It's impossible to get a military victory over them. The best thing we can do, and it's not very satisfying, I admit it, is to have an open-ended situation where the government controls maybe half the country, 60% of the country, including the major cities. And there's something of a standoff with them and the Taliban until such a time the Taliban is prepared to really sue for peace.
If you have some thoughts about the withdrawal, or if you have some questions, please feel free to join us. 866-733-6786 is the number for your calls. That's 866-733-6786, or get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email us, forum@kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny.
Hi there, I'm Rund Abdelfattah from Throughline. If you're listening to this podcast, you know that KQED produces exceptional storytelling that keeps you informed, inspired, and entertained. Their podcasts cover issues from your neighborhood to the entire country and everything in between. Support this work today.
You can help us continue to bring quality podcasts to your ears. Just head to donate.kqed.org/podcast. That's donate.kqed.org/podcast.
This is Forum. Our guest this segment is Richard Haas, president of the Council on Foreign Relations, and we're talking about what's behind the troop drawdown in Iraq and Afghanistan and other foreign policy news. And getting some comments here, let me read a couple of them. Daniel writes, Trump is doing everything he possibly can to make the Biden transition as difficult as possible. Same for everything under the transition umbrella, not just troop withdrawal. He's decapitating every agency head he can to that end. And a tweet from Jeanette who says, stop this monster, Trump. Put him on hold until January. GOP, where is your sense? Let's bring a caller on. Max, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning. My question for your guest is that if 2 decades of, a fairly unified military support in Afghanistan wasn't sufficient to be able to bring us to solving this, what is the actual plan from any respected expert in this field? In the Vietnam War, we eventually admitted, hey, this is something we got to leave. So what is our plan for Afghanistan? If it's not going to be a troop reduction, what are we expected to see? What are we expected to gain from continuing military operations? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Yeah, thank you for that, Max. Richard Haas.
Now, Max, it's exactly the right question. It's a difficult question, but let me do my best to answer it. I don't think there is a solution. So let me just put that out there. Not everything in life is a problem to be solved. This is a condition or a situation to be managed. And to me, the goal is a responsible government not losing power to an irresponsible and dangerous group like the Taliban. And that's where I think you could have a very small U.S. troop presence that would have to be open-ended, somewhere about 4,000, 5,000 troops, not fighting the war, but essentially advising, training, equipping, providing intelligence support. We would have to provide economic and military aid to the government, and that would be open-ended. And I would simply say we've had open-ended presences in other parts of the world, in Asia, in Europe, and the like. And that seems to me a realistic price to pay. What we want to avoid is an Afghanistan that again becomes a major haven or venue for terrorism. So I realize it's not a satisfying answer, but it's an honest answer.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I'm wondering what your response is when you talk about not satisfying answers. To get your reaction to a listener named Jorge, who writes, your warmonger guest, and frankly, you too, Michael, will never think conditions are right to pull out of Afghanistan, Iraq, or Somalia. The public, both Democratic and Republican, want these endless wars to end. 19 years is long enough. The country should be run by the people, not the military-industrial complex. Trump is finally doing something right. I must say, this is the first time in my whole career I've been called a warmonger. It may be true for you too, but what's your thought about that? Because there are certainly hundreds of thousands of people who feel that it's time enough. This is the longest war and it's taken too much of a toll.
Look, again, if the purpose of what we were doing was to transform Afghanistan and turn it into Sweden in Central Asia, I would agree. But it's not. We have very limited goals and we're committing limited means. And I would simply say to the caller, I think his name is Jorge, think about it. Here we are, where 250,000 Americans have died from a virus that came to us from abroad. Think about it. We just marked the 19th anniversary of 9/11, where nearly 3,000 people were killed here in a day from terrorists who were trained in Afghanistan, or climate change, or any number of other issues. The world matters. So I understand the desire to wash our hands of it, but the world's not going to wash its hands of us. So I think what foreign policy has to be about is how do we make limited, justifiable commitments to push back against threats to the United States that will otherwise come here. And that to me is essentially the argument against the sort of isolationism. This isn't warmongering. This is a responsible international presence for the United States.
Well, we're getting another comment along those lines from a listener named Butch who says, I totally support troop withdrawal from Afghanistan and Iraq. Smart move by Trump. Give him Obama's Nobel Peace Prize. Let me bring another caller on. Yvette joins us. Yvette, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, hi. Go ahead. Yes, we can hear you fine, please.
Oh, yes. You know, from the beginning of these, I put air quotes around the negotiations, you know, I've been extremely puzzled because, the Taliban came down from the mountains and they do have, like you said, where they're located on the western plain, but closer to the mountains. They came down fighting and killed Afghani troops and American troops. And then we negotiated with them under those terms, which is just not seems to be non-negotiable right there, lose. A line gets drawn with that. But then when we did negotiate, the Taliban were making terms of negotiations. And in fact, you know, the ambassador to the Afghani ambassador is a woman, and you know she wasn't allowed to be in the negotiations. And so, from way back when, I felt I couldn't see how this could be productive at all because I couldn't believe some of the promises that were made, and they can't, you know, the recent bombings of the Kabul University and so forth.
Yvette, let me come in here for a minute and go to Richard Haass on this. Let's talk about those negotiations from the perspective that she's bringing up. I mean, one would have to wonder about their efficacy on any level, particularly in the context of Al-Qaeda being in support of them at this point, aren't they?
I think these negotiations were never about peace. They were never about stability. These negotiations were about an American exit. Let's just call it for what it was. And as a result, they were questionable from the get-go. They will not lead to stability. They will not lead to American security against terrorism. They will certainly not lead to peace in Afghanistan. So the callers who favor, not this most recent caller, but the others who have weighed in favor of American complete withdrawal, they should know what it is they're signing up to. It's not peace. If it were peace, I would favor it too. What they are signing up to is a Taliban takeover of Afghanistan and the potential for Afghanistan to again become a terrorist refuge, which, among other things, could affect security here in the United States or could affect other American interests around the world. So let's at least have an honest conversation about the consequences of Mr. Trump's policy.
And let me thank Yvette for her call and go to a comment from a listener named Jim who says, my understanding is that the U.S. forces in Afghanistan and Iraq are there as part of coalition forces. Have the coalition been included in this recent decision? I think it's an important point because you got about 38 countries. Are they going to follow about 12,000 troops or, for that matter, NATO troops going to follow withdrawal? Richard?
This American decision was not made in coordination with our NATO partners, which, again, sends a terrible message to our principal allies. But without a certain level of American troops, and it's a little bit unclear, but I don't think we will be able, I don't think if we go ahead with this withdrawal, we will have sufficient strength to give the security and support that our NATO allies require for them to remain. So I think you will see some unraveling of the international presence in Afghanistan if we go ahead with this unilateral action.
And Susan wants to know, what's the military's role and opinion on this withdrawal? And in fact, a related question from Jeanette says, why is the military cooperating with Mr. Trump? Will they do so even if he tries to attack Iran?
Well, it's pretty clear from news reports that the military opposes what this has done, but this is a lawful order. It's in the providence of the President of the United States to make such decisions. So the military will weigh in, but so long as it's a lawful order, they will then salute and carry it out with their professionalism. But they've made no secret that they think this is ill-advised, which, as you suggested before, is one of the reasons I believe that Mr. Esper is no longer the Secretary of Defense.
Wasn't there also, Richard, something in the works, at least a proposal that was put forward by President Trump, and he's dissuaded by the military and Pompeo and others, to actually take action against Iran because of their nuclear site, because international inspectors were reporting an increase in the stockpile of nuclear material?
Yeah, that was the New York Times story, I guess, about 1 or 2 days ago, Michael. Exactly. Iran has moved considerably beyond the constraints that were set out in the 2015 agreement, which, important to point out, the United States unilaterally withdrew from. They now have far more uranium and at a slightly higher level of enrichment. The time they would need if they were to make a sprint towards a nuclear weapon has been significantly reduced. But the argument against using military force, there's several. It would strengthen the regime in Iran. They would retaliate in all sorts of ways in all sorts of places. They would ultimately rebuild their nuclear capability, but put it far further underground. We would isolate ourselves again more than Iran. So, again, I think there's powerful reasons not to use military force. And the real question, I think, facing the Biden administration will be what sort of diplomatic option is there to once again bring Iran back into certain constraints? And then what do we do once those constraints expire? And I think the real question here, Michael, is not a short-term challenge for the United States, but it's a medium and longer-term challenge, because we never want Iran to either get a nuclear weapon or get 90% of the way there. And the question is, how can we achieve that?
Now, a lot of big questions looming, and certainly as the next administration steps in, we will continue to monitor them. Richard Haass, always good to have you with us. I appreciate very much your being with us.
Thanks, my friend.
It's Richard Haass, President of the Council on Foreign Relations.
Hey there, this is Brittany Luce from NPR's It's Been a Minute. KQED's podcasts like The Bay, Bay Curious, Mind Shift, Right Nowish, and more all tell the stories of the Bay and beyond with reliable, human-centered journalism. They aim to inspire, make you think, entertain, and expand your understanding of the place you call home. Here's how you can support podcasting at KQED.
Showing your support is easy, and you can join Brittany in supporting KQED Podcast too at donate.kqed.org/podcast. That's donate.kqed.org/podcast.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
Hey, it's Glenn Washington from Snap Judgment. And if you love what you're hearing, and I know you love what you're hearing, please consider becoming a KQED member. Get special access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. Plus, you'll sleep better at night knowing you did your part for the community you depend upon. It's in you. Please be in it. Visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to sign up now. That's podcast with an S. Thanks.